Okay, you're tuned into Enemy Combatant Radio. This is DJ Sweetie with In the Meantime on enemycombatantradio.net, streaming live this program every first and third Tuesday of the month. And we're talking about collectives and co-ops and alternative economics and what it means to work together in non-hierarchical ways. And today I have two members of the Entente. Sorry, one of you guys gotta say. Say it again.
Entente Kunst,
yes. collective, and we are gonna play a track actually right now to start off the show. It's called States of Abuse, and I'm just gonna go with that right now, and then we'll hear something here directly from them.
States of abuse, states of abuse, states of abuse. Pressure presses on the back of your neck, the ache of the clock as you wake late to the job that takes. You say to yourself, to endure the strain, I don't got it as bad as, and you don't. Pennies keep adding up to nothing till it builds that empty feeling that you were always bound to lose. Surviving under these states of abuse, we work, workers toiling the land, profits stolen by the boss's hands, from the women in Juarez, Mexico, to the Africans, shot down off Italy's shore, to the dock, workers off Oakland's ports, to the truckers traveling up and down English roads, interlinked to history, intertwined our future, in this world defiled by these states of abuse and torture, that provide more corporate breaks, writing checks that bomb shoot, pollute starving scar, making fat cats fatter while the PNM complex gets bigger, funding that ever-expanding noose around the necks of me and you. Freedom remains occupied in these states of abuse. Their wars are always justified, the propaganda intensified to dummy us all into submission. A common enemy must be supplied, a face the media paints, pouring communal power to the hierarchical state that's always on the take, taking lives for gold, stealing land, causing wars to support long after we're gone. The class status that sold every citizen into slavery in Rome, the brute force that murdered over a million in the Indian Wars, the terror that slaughtered Apache and Cherokee, both young and old, the power that consent puts into control, their lies become true. Every country is a terror campaign, a state of abuse. North to south, east to west, here, there, everywhere, a state of abuse, a state of abuse. If they come for you, they're gonna get me too, a state of abuse. From the Greek and Roman empires to the 1900 Chinese dynasties, sailing the Spanish conquistadors to the Balkan War of 1912, a state of abuse, a state of abuse. The wars that never end is the war dropped from the upper classes to the working and the poor masses, a systematic state of abuse.
Governments lie. Very important to remember. Governments lie. I mean, not just the American government. Governments in general lie. Now, when I say all governments lie, that may sound like an anarchist statement. The anarchists have something there. Yeah. They're right to be skeptical and suspicious of people who hold governmental power, because the tendency of people who hold governmental power is to lie in order to maintain that power.
All right, this is In the Meantime with DJ Sweetie on enemycombatantradio.net. And I'm in the studio today with Entente Kunst, and two folks, Raw Knowledge and Malatesta, are sitting with me here today. And why don't you introduce yourselves one at a time and just tell us why you formed this collective or what's important to you about it.
Hello, Raw Knowledge here. I do like vocals, lyrics, and stuff. I'm a writer first, I guess, and I do what I do because I want to put some ideas out there and somehow have those ideas affect a broader world or culture and bring us to the point of having a social revolution.
My name is Mo. I go by the name of Malatesta, after the infamous Italian anarchist. I actually am the founder of the collective a few years back. Basically, the idea is that to get anarchist ideas into the world of electronica and hip-hop as a means to communicate with just regular working people, because I feel that they kind of listen to that music stuff, you know. And so it seemed like a good idea, and it has been a good idea, and it's been pretty successful so far. So it's very much a kind of, I think, a political act. The music that I make, in fact, every single track I've ever made is. so. Yeah, that's the big inspiration. That's what drives it, is the idea that you can put ideas in situations that they don't normally crop up in.
Mm-hmm. So you just came out with a new album, is that right? Is it a compilation?
Yes. Very happy about that. Okay. States of Abuse.
Okay, tell us about that. Who did you work with and what kind of music did you put out? We just heard a track from that, actually.
Yeah, we have a pretty broad mix of people that are on it. DJ Rubbish, UK hip-hop artist, producer from Britain. Some other folks from Baltimore, Seattle, and yeah.
The compilation is basically a critique of the world as it is, pretty much, through the voices and music of various artists from all over the certainly Britain and the US, and it features all different types of styles of electronic music, but specifically I would say US hip-hop and UK grime, UK garage type stuff, from MC Cox and Giddy Limit, as well as some hip-hop and dub from Trim and Monkey Tribe from Glasgow, Scotland.
How did you find the musicians, and had you worked with them before?
It was mostly on our tour in Europe, and Europe and Britain is really, people are very open-minded and they're really community-driven. So there's a lot of music exchanges and musical styles and just creativity circulating around, and we got good responses when we were touring and good responses when we gave our records to people and just tried to maintain contact when we came back. So it kind of built, and it's a evolving type of building still, you know.
Do you think there's a common ideological kind of bent to the folks that you worked with, or is it a mix of different styles and philosophies?
It's pretty much, I mean, I would think that other than Philistine, maybe, I'm sure we're the only people on the record that would refer to ourselves as anarchists. But at the same time, yeah, a lot of people, it's pretty complex, but ultimately there's people that are, like, at the very least, I don't know, humanitarians and stuff like that that are involved. None of them associated with any of the authoritarian leftist ideologies or anything like that, but not specifically anarchist either.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you, anarchism? That's a pretty big question.
Well, I think it's, for me personally, yeah, in a simple way, I think it's the self-emancipation of the working class, which may make sense to people listening or may not, but basically it's about working people who make this planet tick, taking control themselves of their own existence, of their own lives, and making it better in a non-authoritarian manner. I think that's my understanding of it. That's my understanding of the history of it since the First International. And I think it's a working class thing. And it's about, as I say, workers stepping up to the plate and taking over the world together.
How about you?
I agree with that. It's not to really exclude middle class people from getting these ideas and actually, you know, participating, but it's the working class people actually having and using their means and their skills and actually doing things for themselves without people who come from a certain amount of privilege dictating to working class people, you know, first of all, what their freedom looks like or what their freedom is. It's working class people defining it for themselves and actually, you know, moving forward to having a completely different world than what we have now, based on sustainability and, you know, positive ideas.
And you see Entartete Kunst as a part of that expression?
I think for myself, I see what we do as spreading propaganda, really, which, you know, it's kind of cut along the same lines as other types of activism, in a sense. But I see us as just trying to spread these ideas that we believe in the hopes of just having a better world than what we have now. And that comes from our own personal, you know, backgrounds and just basically waking up in the morning and seeing, you know, fellow people in this world just hurting or, you know, struggling to survive with just trying to get basic things taken care of. And if our label, by putting out a record, it can reach 1,000 people and 1,000 people, you know, get turned on to these ideas and decide to create some kind of change within their community, then that would be just like the absolute best or awesome experience. And to contribute to that is something that is kind of why I do what I do within the label, you know.
Cool. So tell me how you formed then. How did you come together about, what, 2.5 years ago?
Yeah, well, initially I'd kind of ran it was a record label, I guess, put out a couple of compilations, wasn't completely clued in about the collective process or anything like that, didn't really understand it, how simple it really was, how easy it is to actually do it where you're at. For me, it was I basically put out a couple of compilations, hooked up with lots of different musicians. I was always kind of like politically motivated, but it wasn't very coherent. And then about 2.5 years ago, basically, we had been working quite heavily, myself, Drowning Dog, and Ron Ollie's 187, on some projects, and it seemed like the total obvious logical thing to do at that point, due to our learning of politics and stuff, that, hey, we should collectivise this. It shouldn't just be Malatesta's.
You're somebody who kind of gives directions to other folks?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, authoritarian in the sense of taking away your power to have a choice or a decision within a group or within a situation. I mean, we don't do things by consensus, you know what I mean? We kind of like, we talk things out and we kind of pretty much... Sorry, you want to take over for that?
We talk about a lot of things and, you know, sometimes we argue or whatnot, but the basis of our organizing or our structure is the fact that not one person has the authority or the rule to rule over everybody else, you know? And it's definitely a lot better than having someone dictate or tell you that, well, I'm going to do this and we're all going to do it because I said so. You know, it's like, well, If your idea is good, then let's talk about that idea and see where it kind of goes. If I disagree with your idea and have something to contribute, there's like a space for that to happen naturally, you know. And I think that it's all part of, like, you know, growing and evolving into like a human being, you know. It's definitely a process, just like politics are. You know, you start off thinking one way and you read more books or you get more involved and active, and your politics evolve and evolve and evolve. And I think collectives kind of have that basic potential, or they do the same thing. You grow and you become a stronger collective, and eventually whatever project that you're doing, it also becomes strong. Everything becomes more viable and sustainable in that sense. So
you think you learned like more skills on how to negotiate and work with each other? Has that been part of the process?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's just part of like everyday living, you know what I mean? Like, I think everybody communicates, and you learn how to talk to people and, you know, listen and things like that. And yeah, it's definitely not something, you don't have to go to school to learn it. I mean, you just do it, you know. And if everybody has a sense of empowerment, it's really natural that, you know, you feel empowered in order to speak, or you feel empowered to contribute and things like that. So it's definitely, it's very natural, I think.
How has it improved you were saying that it's actually improved the collective, the collective process has improved the label or the...
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I mean, it makes everything seem, I mean, let's see, it's like kind of, for want of a better expression, it's like putting your money where your mouth is with regards to the propaganda that we put out there. Yeah, as regards to it being more effective, yeah, I think so. It makes us feel as if every single person that's involved in the collective, the three of us, all have, we all have a real investment in the organisation. You know, it's like it's as much Drowning Dogs and Tartedekunst as it is 187s, as it is Malatestas, and that's taken a while to get to that point, without a doubt. But that to me is just, that's a great, great thing. I mean, the feeling of that, of knowing that, especially from my perspective, with the sense that I started the organisation and it was my label and now it's our label, is like, it feels great. It really feels great. It feels, it's efficient based on the fact that we all have the same, as I say, investment. We all have the same, we want the same result, as opposed to one person being more committed than someone else or something. Mm-hmm. And that's that's great.
Well, why don't you introduce the next track then? We're going to do track three, which is...
The next track is a collaboration between myself, Malatesta, and Drowning Dog on vocals. It's Arte de Kunz's class conscious theme track, it seems like.
The song I would like to dedicate to everybody who's a member of the working class.
It goes on every day. People get paid in a crazy way. It's a class war. It goes on every day. People get paid in a crazy way. It's a class war. It goes on every day. Monetary, mental, physical decay. Monetary, mental, physical decay. Monetary, mental, physical decay. It's a class war.
This is about
community.
This is about
freedom now.
This is about
power. And who has power and who doesn't?
This is about
class war.
You gotta hustle for the food just to feed the poor. It's a class war.
We're back. This is In the Meantime on Enemy Combatant Radio. I'm DJ Sweetie, and the first and third Tuesdays of every month, I'll be talking with various folks from different collectives and cooperatives in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and around the country and hopefully around the world. Today, I am talking with Enatete Kunst members, Raw Knowledge and Malatesta. And we're talking about basically the collectively managed record label that they're working on, as well as their own individual musicianship. And I want to talk some more about the main idea, I guess, behind the collective is to be spreading propaganda. So maybe we should talk a little bit more about that as... you know, what you mean by propaganda or artistry, and kind of how you got into that focus. Who should go?
Pretty much we're all kind of like really into the idea of creating an anarchist society. So before we even install the software, that's a frame of mind, you know what I mean? That's where we're coming from. What's more important to us than anything else is for a change in how the world's organised. So naturally, everything we do musically stems from that. To be perfectly honest, I mean, it seems as if, for me anyway, that is the single most important thing. The reason why I turn on the computer every day is... in order to try and influence the world. It's as simple as that, you know. I want my influence in the world because I trust my ideals. I believe in my ideals. The ideals, as I said before, about the self-emancipation of the working class. I think that's how we topple over capitalism. I think that we are the majority of the world. And it's just a question of hopefully our people, the working class, getting hip to the ideas and making it happen. And I think through spreading propaganda, it's one of the most honest things you can do. A lot of people are critical of commerce, and which of course we are under the big picture. But as regards to making records and selling them and getting the information out there, I personally think it's one of the most honest and pure things you can do, based on the idea that you're not organising people. The point is for us not to organise people per se. The point is to give them tools to make them want to organise themselves. It's not about us telling people how to live their life. It's about us maybe suggesting that if you pull your resources along with your workmates' resources and stuff like that, you've actually got power, and that you can do something to change the world. So that's what I think is quite pure about propaganda, is the fact that people can do what they like with it. You know,
It is an effective tool. It's been proven in history, you know, Barcelona, 1936, you know, Spain, a million people stood up to Franco, you know, and they organized themselves, they fed everybody, they clothed people, they were babysitters, they were all kinds of things while they were fighting fascism face to face, guns and bullets, you know. It is totally possible. People can organize themselves and work together in order to help the bigger picture, you know.
And that's why you're doing what you're doing. So what do you mean by propaganda then, in terms of being an artist? How does that work?
The content of your songs, I suppose. The content of your songs, your artwork, what you say in radio interviews, that kind of thing, you know. It's basically... instead of us talking about how many BPM the track is right now, we're talking about anarchism, and that's what we're all about. You know, we'll try and set that agenda, whatever environment we go into, where we talk about that, because that's why we exist, as regards to otherwise we'd be at home making the music for ourselves, hanging out, whatever. But the point of taking it into the public domain, and if that means through producing records and CDs and getting involved in capitalism to that extent, so be it, because ultimately we have to, the ideas, as I kind of stressed before, the ideas have to get into the hands of the working people, and if the working people decide to throw it over their shoulder, big deal, that's the way it is. But if they take it on board, it's on.
And it's amazing. It's like, it happens, you know, it happens, I think, a lot more than people realize. And yeah.
What happens?
Working people getting together and coming together, and even just like saying, well, the city's not going to fix the sewer, and we need the sewers to be fixed. I have a friend who knows how to do this and that, coming together, getting it done. You know, small things like that that improve the everyday life are just as positive as, you know, then fighting for the bigger one, which is to get the government off our backs, period, you know, and not replacing it. Not replacing it. And just creating a better world for everybody, not just one specific group. Not if it means one group has to suffer for the other one to live freely, you know, but for everybody, you know.
Well, tell me about your recent tour then. I mean, you organized that yourself. You set up the shows, et cetera, or did you get a lot of help from people in Europe?
We basically, before the whole tour and things like that, we sent out calls and we emailed people. We got in touch with insane amounts of people via the internet, via whatever. We really wanted to go to Europe and try to like spread these ideas also. We did get help from people in Europe because we wouldn't have been able to play if we didn't. Yeah.
We also got help from people from here. Some people contacted various indie media folks from all over Europe. Lisa, actually, that I think of. And various people around put calls out to people from all over Europe, and we got quite a good response. You know what I mean? Like, we would probably have, like, maybe one weekly meeting with regards to the basics, and then we'd obviously probably go at it the other 5 or 6 days of the week anyway, you know, to try and make this happen, because it was like a big dream for us and it was kind of loaded full of ideology and everything, and it was like us against the world and we're going to do this and against all the odds kind of thing, and pulled it off. Lost a wee bit of money, not too much, which is great. And yeah, it was a really positive experience. We got a real taste of the different types of activism that exist in different cities and in different countries throughout Europe.
Where did you go?
We went to the UK, we went to France, Belgium, Holland, Germany, Spain, Italy, and I think that's it.
Okay.
Just a really positive experience. Most of those places, specifically probably a place called the Cowley Club in Brighton, was really good for us. We played at an anti-racism festival anti-fascism festival in Hanover in Germany, which was really nice. We also had a great show in Barcelona in a place called Helio Gobal, which was great. What else did we play? We're all over the place. But,
What were your shows like, or how did you perform live basically, and you're doing video as well?
Actually, we had kind of static video that kind of went with the songs that we projected, and yeah, it was actually then on that tour we all did separate sets, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
Malatesta, myself, done a separate set. 187, who was commonly known as Raw Knowledge at the time, done a spoken word set, which obviously went down kind of quite peculiarly in places like Italy and Spain where they don't speak English. And so that's something to learn if anyone's out there and they're going to go to foreign-speaking countries and they do spoken word. It's quite a strange one. And and just like kind of like getting a feel very briefly, obviously, by being in a country a day or two or a city for a day or two, getting a feel for the politics of certainly the people that were involved in the show, that kind of thing.
It was definitely an amazing experience for myself because I was born and raised in California, so flying to a completely different country was absolutely, I was blown away and very, very I don't know if humbled is the right word, but I just totally amazed at the kindness and generosity of complete strangers.
Yeah, repeatedly, whatever country we went, that seemed to be the case. It was,
even though
it was quite overwhelming, actually.
Yeah,
What kind of places did you play at? What kind of venues?
Real weird stuff.
Social centers, which is different than a squat, but social centers are a little bit, I don't know how to describe it, but they're...
They're almost getting to the point where they're somewhat mainstream, which I think's a great thing.
A squat or a social center?
Well, the social centres, you know, like, there's the social centres, if I can give you an example. We didn't actually play here, but there's a place called Leon Cavallo in Milan. And, for example, each mayor that gets into power in Milan constantly tries to close this place down, and repeatedly every 2 years or 4 years, whenever it is, the community fight back and keep it opened, because it plays such an important role in the society that no matter who you are, mayor, politician, whatever, to try and tell the people that this place needs to be closed down because it's full of freaks or it's full of this or that, is people just don't buy it. Because, for example, if you're a single mom and you have your kid in the daycare centre at the squat, it's a total necessity, it's free of charge. So if the cops and the politicians want to close that down, the cops and the politicians become your enemy, because you want your kid looked after. And it seems all so kind of like practical, you know, everything seems really practical. Although there's obviously a major strain within that whole world of squats in Europe and stuff, where it's more of a kind of party-based scene, which perhaps local regular people don't give a damn if they get closed down, you know, because they maybe make noise and create mess or whatever. So there's some that are very social orientated and community orientated, and there's some that are just more kind of like individualistic kind of, I don't know, college kids going wild. I don't know what the
hell. You think the ones that are more socially oriented, they're more successful, or they last longer in the community?
Oh, totally, because they have the support of the community, and that's the difference, you know. It's like, it's one thing being a radical and stuff, but I mean, if people don't like you around, then it's going to be hard to, like, in other words, well, I don't know if this is the right word to use, but kind of like your constituency, the people that are actually around about you that are responding to your political acts or not, you have to have a bond with and something in common with, you know. It's like, you can't just kind of like stand in a void and scream about how the world should be better or whatever. You have to, like, engage with people, and the ones that are successful are the ones that have the local people's support.
Did you, what kind of audiences did you have coming to your shows? Did you?
Oh, it was a mix. It was really a mix. At the Cali Club, it was, it's anarchist kind of social center, so at night it's for members, but during the day it's open to the community. So it was mostly playing with people who, you know, obviously know what's going on in the world and things like that. But it was great to get kind of, I guess, a pat on the back from your peers and just be like, keep it up, guys, you know. And going to Milan and playing a show in Barrios was very interesting. Like you said, there's just regular people and whatnot there, but because I was doing spoken word, not everybody understood what I was saying, so it was just this talking head on stage. But it was a lot of different kinds of people were there, and at that particular event. And same with Spain. It's I don't know if it's something with to do with those two countries specifically, but it seemed like there are a lot of different people from different ages and things like that. So it was a really positive experience.
Spain was definitely very special for us, especially with the fact that we'd read all the history about Barcelona and being the kind of probably the quintessential anarchist revolution or whatever. That was a big moment for us. And a lot of our videos had people like Durruti in the videos and stuff like that, and the response was just unbelievable, you know.
Everybody
going crazy, and Viva l'Anarchia and all that kind of thing. And
afterwards, just people talking about, like, over just, it's amazing how, like, the whole language barrier can sometimes just go
dissolved
out the window, you know, and you're just communicating back and forth with people. And it was,
That was really great. That was a great experience. Also, in Hanover when we played at that festival, that was good because it was nice to be treated with a bit of respect as well from the promoters, which is kind of always quite a rare thing, really, through no fault of their own most of the time. But that was good because it was a big thing, you know. It was like, I don't know, 500 or 600 people or something like that. So that for us, that was nice, you know. Just again, a lot of the time it's validation because it seems as if you are hitting your head against the wall so often, you know, with the content and stuff like that. And especially if you're kind of quite, to be honest, probably quite brave like we are, in the sense of we're prepared to, like, take our politics to mainstream audiences and mainstream journalists and stuff like that and assume that they're crazy for not understanding it or not thinking that, of course, that's the greatest idea in the world. So we kind of... we kind of, you know, you've got to be quite thick-skinned, I think.
Well, maybe let's play another track, and then maybe we can come back and talk a little more about that, some of the problems and the challenges that you face or organizing yourselves collectively, and maybe on the tour or something like that. So I was going to play track 9 here. You want to introduce that one?
Sure, if you want to. That's something you were involved in.
Uranium 238. It's a track that I did with Trim from the UK, a by chance accidental meeting, which ended up being a great song.
All right.
What do you think?
Nagasaki's nightmare. A hellfire missile, more precise, lethal, and death creeps as tumors grow in us all for 250,000 years. Thank you.
All right, we're back. This is In the Meantime on Enemy Combatant Radio. I'm your host, DJ Sweetie. And in the background, the last of that track there. Okay, so why don't you tell us about some of the problems that you face when you're on your tour and maybe how that reflects on your kind of collective process, or maybe it's more a question about day-to-day kind of process, whatever seems more fruitful to talk about. But, you know, I'm sure on the tour you've got deadlines, you've got to make it to the next show, you've got to work, you know, with people that you've never worked before. And, you know, do you find that, that having one person to deal with them, those people directly is best, or did you always kind of organically, the three of you, you know, collectively make these decisions and organize the whole thing, or was there one person kind of specializing in one thing?
Generally it was like who, like if I got the gig in, Milan, then it was basically me communicating with that person and making sure that we had a place to stay and stuff like that. For the most part, being on the road, we don't really have any problems.
If I remember rightly, we would actually have our same weekly meetings in things like a parking lot in the back of the van,
yeah,
in a certain country or whatever. And so in that sense, we were kind of quite, we did stand by our, like, our structure and stuff like that in a physical sense, like all the way through it, even in the most unusual situations. I think mainly because of the fact a lot of the thing is because it was a new thing to us. You know, we'd only been maybe like collectively organized for about 6 months maybe at that point. So it was still pretty fresh for us, so we were still kind of like feeling out how the whole thing works. And if I remember rightly, we stuck to kind of like our formal meetings. As far as like interacting with the actual people that we're doing the gigs for, I think that's more complex, and I don't know I think that communication isn't collectivized, you know what I mean, in the sense that we're a closed collective. As far as like us three got together, we decided that we wanted to do a variety of different things in a non-authoritarian manner. So as a result, we kind of came up with a structure, but we had an agreement. We agreed to do these things beforehand. Whereas when you're communicating with a stranger about a specific thing, that interaction isn't necessarily anarchist or non-authoritarian, even for that matter. You know what I mean? The guy decides to question us about something or say no to something or whatever without us having it. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not... The thing that's collectivised and the thing that's anarchist is specifically our three people's relationship with each other based on a prior agreement. And so therefore, we kind of just stuck to that format when we were on the road. And yeah, I mean, for the most part, it worked pretty well. But again, because I think we're kind of like, I don't want to say we're idealistic or anything, really. I mean, I suppose we are. But, you know, that was like... It's not like we make hip hop and we kind of like the idea of social change. We like the idea of social change, and as a result of it, the reason why I'm saying this is because in the hope that there's other people out there that are maybe like trying to propagate through art and through music and things like that. And you know, sometimes you can stand still because you want to be so pure. You know what I mean? You've got a terrible example. You've got to break a few omelets to make an egg, a few eggs to make an omelet, you know. So it's like kind of, it's not all pure and it's not all perfect. There's obviously major disagreements ideologically between everybody all the time. I think that's just part of life. But the difference is, and the point is that to be able to get through it and for everybody to be happy, basically, when they get through the decision making process, you know. And we managed to, I think, on the whole, pull that off wherever we went, all over Europe. And it's kind of hard to say it, but I think, you know, because you can come across as arrogant and things like that, but I think we as people, certainly on that tour, we had an awful lot of humility on board, you know what I mean? So it kind of, as you said, you know, going to a new country, being kind of, we certainly weren't arrogant, that's for sure. And as a result of that, I think that humility is always a good thing when it comes to respect and process, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Raw Knowledge, about when you're interacting with other, with actual, what, people who are running venues or whatever? I mean, they're not coming from a collective process, right? But internally, you have to make your decisions collectively. Was that confusing to the people that you worked with, or was that a process of education maybe, or did it not really even come up?
It didn't really come up. I think for the most part, most of the places that we played with, the people who put on the shows, they went on our website. They kind of knew what we were about. They knew that we were a collective and things like that. How we come up with our decisions, you know, is something that we do on the side. You know, if there was something that, you know, the whole group really needed to make their decision, like, I'm not going to make this decision for them or whatever. I let them know what the situation is or the deal is and how do you feel about it, any ideas. And, you know, if people said, well, no, really it's not, you know, you handle it or whatever, then it's like I use my better judgment because it's not just me. I'm thinking about everybody else and what's best for everybody else also. And if things got to a point where it was like, you know, generally, we talk about a lot of things anyway, so I kind of knew where anytime something would come up, we kind of knew where each other was at in a way, so it wasn't just like one person just overriding everybody else and going off and doing whatever they wanted, you know.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time with each other as well, which I think, again, because we're kind of limited in our experience as regards to collectivity, because we're at least for a couple of us, or at least one of us, this is the only collective that we've ever been involved in, so it's kind of, it's hard to gauge, but yeah, it just seems...
Because we've been around each other, we have meetings and things like that, we kind of know
which is kind of complicated though, I think, because what happens is you don't know what's going down to, like, what's coming down to, like, just personal respect and enjoyment of each other's company and what is the collective process, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. It's like, I'm sure it really helps if you get along, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's necessary, for sure, and I don't think that people should be thinking out there that you can't create an anarchist collective because... you know, you're scared of indifferences with other people. I mean, that's part of the process is arguing with each other, trying to argue your point strongly, getting defeated, winning, as regards to getting your point across, and being able to deal with it, and saying that, hey, you guys might think that this is the way to go, I don't, but when all's said and done, I respect your judgment, you know. Again, it's kind of difficult to work out whether that's a relationship, friendship thing, or if it's the collective structure that's bringing that together, you know.
Do you think the collective structure supports friendships, or does it make it, do you say, okay, I need to put my friendship aside, I'm playing a role of kind of looking out for my interests within the collective, you know, like, is it a kind of thing that makes you happier to be with each other, or is it kind of like we need to put our, this is a business relationship almost, when
in the long term that's what makes everybody feel a part of it, you know, is the collectivized part of it. I mean, it's like the concept, I think, of anarchism and collectivization, I think, like that, is to make a better world. I think, like, structurally, forgetting people's emotions, which is almost impossible, but the structure in itself creates human happiness. And that sounds cheesiest, but it's like, as opposed to authoritarian or cohesion like when people don't get all, you know, it's like it's a structural answer to problems that come up, that it helps with that. If capitalism creates competition and angst amongst people and stuff like that, then I think collectivity in the long term, without a doubt, creates solidarity and genuine friendship. So in the long run, it's and as you said probably previously, it makes you more of a complete human being to live like that. And that's why we are kind of like so positive about it, as well as, even though we're in a situation where we're against all odds, which we are, you know what I mean? That's the reality of it. We don't have any money. We try to put out these ideas. We all work shitty jobs, you know. It's like...
So how do you support the label, or how does that... Where's the money
We save up our wages and we put that shit out, and we don't get very much money for shows. And we've been doing this for at least 2.5 years, and even before that, when I would do it, you know, this is a real kind of labour of love as regards to, like, if we can die and have made an impact on some people, then we'll die happy.
Pretty much.
Where do you see your collective going in the next, say, year or 5 years? Do you think you'll be around for 5 years, for another 5 years?
Hope so, but I hope we have a social revolution beforehand, you know.
Yeah, because again, fundamentally why we do this is for that. And because it's not just as simple as that, also for our own personal lives as well, it makes us happier in the long run, makes us feel like somebody, because it's obviously your job and capitalism and living in America or the Western world in 2005 or anywhere in the world for that matter. These powers that be are really good at making you feel like a nobody, you know. So it's like, in a lot of ways, it gives you a bit of self-respect, you know. And that's fucking, no money can buy that shit, you know.
What do you think, in terms of what are the biggest lessons that you learned from the process being involved in this past, with the past 2 years or so? What kind of ideas did you have before you started working in a collective, and how has that changed?
Can you ask that again? I'm sorry.
Sure. Maybe that wasn't said very well. I'm just wondering if you had certain ideas about what it meant to be in a collective, or what it was going to be like to make decisions collectively that have that didn't stand the actual experience, that you've actually changed your idea about how a collective is, or how it's structured, or what's good about it.
Well, I guess, like, I volunteered at many different collectives and co-ops and stuff like that. So I kind of, like, realized that everybody does things differently. Everybody has, you know, it's different. It's just how each collective decides they're going to structure themselves in order to create or run their business or whatever, you know. Everybody has different structures that they use in order to, you know, make their collective or co-op work. My ideas, I haven't really changed that much. I think, as far as collectives go, this one is somewhat loose in that sense, you know. There are things that we're still trying to, I don't know, formulate's the right word, but, put into play or see if it can work or be more, progressive and moving forward. So I'm pretty open to a lot of ideas and suggestions, and I think, like, the other two people involved are too, you know. We're pretty open-minded and, like, just wanting to make the collective stronger and better and, you know, move forward in that sense, so.
What about you? Is there anything you started this record label or the album label before you were actually in a collective process?
Yeah.
What's the biggest change or biggest
lesson? I think ultimately, first of all, to give up that power for me was really difficult, but it was a challenge, you know, because give it up for what, you know? I don't know, because it was the first time, you know? And so in that sense, I was really quite apprehensive about it. But the more that I saw Drowning Dog and 187 making decisions that blew me away, then I was like, oh yeah, this is great. I'm not as smart as I think I am. And other people's opinions and stuff like that just add to a stronger collective and better decisions and more effective decisions and stuff like that. And I'd love to see the collective grow, you know. I'd love to see it
have a few more people.
Yeah, I mean, it goes as far as, yeah, again, we don't have that many experiences. Eunice, 187 here, also has more experience as regards to working in collectives and stuff like that. But I think for the most part, the idea of letting go of the power, or the central power of me making all the decisions, I'm completely blown away about how positive that was. Considering what I was thinking like before it was collectivized to where I'm at now, I just can't believe how much of a positive thing it is, you know. And that's why I would recommend it to anyone. If you're working in a situation, a non-profit, whatever it may be or something like that, it's well worth looking into the ideas of collectivity, because it's kind of like,
it's kind of like having a wheelbarrow.